Hi, I'm Shantae Snellgrove, and in today's Parenting Special Needs podcast, our purposeful conversation is with Merle Meacock. She's an architect, and we're going to be talking about biophilic design. I hope I said it right. What it is, why it matters, and ways we can incorporate it into our everyday life. So please welcome Merle Meacock. Am I saying your name correctly?
Yes.
Okay. Please introduce yourself and tell our audience about it.
Okay. Hi, I'm Merle Meacock. I am an architect. I'm also a planner and a lead AP, and I've been practicing almost 30 years with KSS Architects. We have three offices in Princeton, New Jersey, New York, New York, and Philadelphia, PA. We have about 70 people in the firm, and we are a WBE, which is a women business enterprise, which is nice, you know, given some of the conversations that are going on today. We have a focus on learning, commerce, and community projects. And my particular focus is on community-based projects, especially those for special needs. I have a special niche area there. And thus, I get involved with designing a lot of schools, housing, day centers, clinics, those types of things. And the thing that kind of ties all 70 people in our firm together is that we believe in work that makes meaningful and lasting change for our clients, our society, and our world. So projects that are able to do that are the ones that we're interested in. And special needs is certainly an area where we can make big impact as architects.
So how did you come across biophilic design?
So as part of all of our work, we do a lot of research. And the research that we do is either both national research as well as global research. And our research, my particular research, is around educational environments, special needs, housing, autism. And my newest research is around anxiety and how the environment can support all of those various aspects and different types of clients. And as we're doing our research, we run across different people in the industry or in other industries where we trade notes on things. And biophilic design actually came through somebody in our firm. We have a seminar series every week that we run, and all 70 people come from different backgrounds. And so we trade a lot of notes internally as well. And so I learned about it from one of my peers here at the firm. And what that has allowed us to do is actually some of our projects have been published in trade magazines that are actually picked up on both a national and a global scale. So people actually contact us for our research and we share. And we're actually contacted probably once a month from people all over the world for how to design to support people with autism. And our most recent research on biophilic design also is an area that we're starting to see a lot of trends going in that direction, because people see that as a real benefit, not only to the special needs community, but to humanity at large.
Maybe we should have started with, without interrupting you, I apologize, but I think that for those that aren't familiar with biophilic design, which it was new to me, so can you explain it a little bit, what it is?
Oh, sure. Biophilic design is understanding that there is a human desire to connect to nature. It's sort of in our DNA. And there are cognitive, psychological, and physical benefits to connecting to nature. At one point, our humans were sort of hunter-gatherers, and we depended upon nature for our food sources and those types of things. And we transitioned to an agrarian society where we were relying upon the land. And then over time, we became an industrial society where we were relying less on land and more on machines. And now currently we're a technological society. And so we have been almost completely removed from our dependence upon nature. And so there's a move in the design community to reconnect people back to nature and, you know, sort of fulfill some of the sort of the human needs to make that connection.
Wow. So what are the benefits of biophilic design in environments?
So the benefits are when you can give people ways of navigating buildings, you know, through sort of cues and connections to nature. It gives people an understanding of where they are, what position they are within the community or the neighborhood. And then it allows them to feel a sense of confidence in how they're sort of interacting with the building. And that sense of confidence gives them a sense of inner calm and focus that they might need to either learn or to communicate with someone. And so there are real benefits, and I can, you know, get into a lot more detail on how all that works.
Okay. So can you share like some examples of how it might look for those that aren't maybe understanding how it works in their everyday life?
Sure. To talk a little bit more about biophilic design, we've been studying, Terrapin Green has a book out and it's an online resource. They describe it as 14 patterns. And I'll sort of summarize it in a more simple way. But of those patterns, essentially they fall into a few buckets, you know, connecting to nature and natural systems, whether it's plants, water, animals, light, shadow, reflection, air, temperature, weather, materials, circadian rhythms and seasons. And that those connections bring benefits to humans as they are able to experience a building, whether they're navigating or whether they're trying to study or whether they're experiencing time with their family or with their friends. There are some other patterns that are out there. The idea of refuge and sitting around the fireplace with your family, you're warm, you're safe. That's a biophilic principle that allows someone, you know, that time. The idea of understanding that humans like to prospect out over their land and understand where they are in the, you know, sort of in their neighborhood. So the idea of being able to look out a bay window or being on a balcony, kind of looking out over nature, there's a real benefit to that, you know, in terms of feeling of confidence and security. But then there's also a side of humanity where we like mystery and intrigue. We like risk and peril. And there's a human desire to be inspired and learn new things and gain confidence and momentum. So when you're out in the woods, maybe seeing a cave and it excites you, like what's in there? You know, what I want to go explore that, or a mountain, or even like jumping into a swimming pool. Those are all somewhat risky moves. But as humans, we have this desire, this curious desire to experience those things. And so those experiences can be translated into architecture. And, you know, we use those sort of understanding of how, you know, human desire, how that can be translated into the built form. In terms of the benefits, if you can give people a sense of understanding and choice, and you can, this will allow that person to have higher self-esteem, a sense of security and a sense of belonging. And when they feel like they have that sense of belonging and security, they're able to sort of transcend where they are and they're able to take that next step. Whether it's to talk to someone, but somebody sometimes in the special needs community, specifically autism, the social skills are an area of focus in education. And, you know, shaking somebody's hand or making eye contact or talking with somebody, those require taking risks and feeling a sense of confidence and feeling that you're in an environment where you're able to do that. And so, you know, what we're saying is that biophilic design can help support people in that environment.
So it's also set, I mean, does it appeal? It appeals to all the senses. Is that kind of how it also works? Because like they hear and see and.
Exactly. Yeah. We use biophilic design in combination with a few other design strategies and an understanding of other design strategies. The three other design strategies that we use sensory-based design. Sensory-based design is designing for all of the senses, for the touch, the tactile quality of things, for sound, for, you know, the smell of, you know, herbs and flowers, those types of things. And when you can appeal to all of the senses, those who may be missing one of their senses are able to still experience the architecture through other means. So sensory design is one of the strategies that we use. And in nature, there are lots of opportunities to experience all of your senses, with water being one of the strongest ways to do that, where the sound of water trickling or the ocean or waterfalls or like even like little water features that you can put in your garden. But then also the feeling of diving into water or water on your fingers, you know, droplets of water, the temperature of the water, you know, all these various things. Water is a very sensory piece of nature, let's just say. Another strategy that we use is experiential design. And experiential design understands that there are functional, emotional, social, and symbolic experiences that humans have, and that when we're designing buildings, we're not designing objects, we're actually designing experiences. So people are moving through either a city, moving into our neighborhood, going into a building. These are all experiences. And so if you can support the experience through the use of some of the senses and biophilic design incorporation of nature, it makes that experience that much stronger. And then the last strategy that we use is universal design. Universal design is understanding that design needs to consider everyone, all ages, genders, mobility, socioeconomic classes, and that it shouldn't be an afterthought. And I can give a few examples. So A visual example of biophilic design would be, imagine a room that's just a stark white room with no windows and nothing. You know, you walk in this room, you have sort of one sensory response, let's just say, versus imagine a room that has pets and plants and a window that looks outside. That type of room, from a biophilic design standpoint and a sensory standpoint and an experiential standpoint, is going to make you feel better. It's going to make you feel inspired. Which room are you going to want to sit in? Do you want to sit in the white room, or do you want to sit in the room that has, you know, pieces of little rocks laying around, pieces of shells, or, you know, pieces of nature along the way? A spa is a good example. Also, if you've ever been to a spa, they light candles, they have, the lights are dim, they have lots of natural materials, the music, the sound of birds. These are all sort of biophilic approaches that you can even use in your home, you know, to think about your home, or even in your classroom, where if you can start to incorporate things where people can enjoy and experience nature, and they can be living things or they can be inanimate things like a rock or a log, a little tray of water with maybe some shells in it. Those things provide a real sense of peace to people who are able to experience and enjoy all of those things that might be, you know, that might be there.
So that's what you would recommend for parents or teachers to bring into their homes, like different things to set it up, like the little waterfalls, or I see you have live plants in the back of your office, which is nice.
Yeah, these are very inexpensive strategies. I only moved into this office about a year ago, and, you know, bringing in a few little touches, you know, can really add sort of, you know, a nice touch to things. In terms of what people can do in their homes, I think there are lots of things you can do in with your family or at home. You know, the opportunity to have a pet, whether it's a fish or, you know, even a little hermit crab thing, or have a window and be able to kind of see outside. The idea of seeing nature and seeing nature happen in all the seasons, happen in the morning, happen at sunset, happen at sunrise, connecting back to our circadian rhythm, the full moon, the harvest moon, exposing your family to those things are really positive ways to incorporate those in biophilic design into our everyday lives. Sometimes even taking a walk outside, getting fresh air, sitting on a porch, being able to control your experience with nature is also another area that we talk about, giving people choices and chances to explore different types of buildings, and then also giving them a chance to control their environment. So whether it's pulling the shades down on their window if they don't want to see the sun that day and they want to close it up, they want to shut it out. Ceiling fan, you know, the moving the air around in the room, and you know, that sort of gives someone control over their environment. Once they have that control, they feel a sense of ownership, and they can, it's their space. They're able to control it to their liking. And then that gives them a sense of confidence and peace that, okay, those are things I don't have to worry about. Now I'm on to the next thing. And the next thing is socializing or learning or, you know, doing what I need to do today, you know, along the way.
Wow. So can you share with us an example of how you've incorporated biophilic design in one of your projects? I know I'm specifically talking about the Bancroft School.
Yeah.
But if you want to share about another one, that's fine too.
Oh, that's fine. Bancroft, we just completed a new campus for them, and they're an organization that serves people with developmental and intellectual disabilities. They have a focus on people with autism. And we just created a new campus for them that included housing for their pediatric campus. It included housing, a series of schools, let's just say, clinics, community center. And the campus was 95 acres and 12 new buildings. It was an extensive campus, and it was set in nature. And along the way, we used a lot of strategies of biophilic design within this campus. We basically provided a lot of very sensory-rich experiences on this campus that allowed people to really be able to explore the campus with more confidence, you know, to be able to navigate along the way. And so the first step in doing that was to actually make the campus car-free so that they weren't being confronted with having to navigate traffic and cars and things like that. And so creating kind of a car-free campus created a sense of peace throughout their day, that they could transition between buildings and not have to worry about, you know, safety along the way. We designed the campus as a one-story campus where there was a lot of transparency and visibility between buildings. So there was a line, there was always a line of sight. And a lot of the students on this campus had one-to-one ratio of direct care staff to students. Before they entered this campus, they were on a campus that was designed maybe in the 50s, and it was somewhat outdated in terms of its design approach to supporting people with autism. But this transparency and the fact that there was a lot of safety on campus with no cars and everything was on one story and everything was very visible gave the students a lot more confidence to be able to navigate by themselves. And their direct care staff, rather than having to be kind of within a couple feet of them at all times, were able to kind of let them roam a little bit more and let them kind of wander beyond the edges. And this really gave the students a lot of confidence and a lot of, it actually encouraged very positive behavior because they were able to navigate their own environment and they weren't being told what to do and how to navigate a building, but they were making those choices themselves. Some of the other strategies that we used were, because it is a campus, the client didn't want it to look like an institution. They wanted it to look like somebody's home because it is going to be somebody's home. But however, we had to, you know, we did have to enclose the campus. So what we did was we actually created a lot of we used the buildings as natural boundaries where we had to have fencing. We kind of hid the fencing behind plants and also where it was exposed, we allowed it to become part of the architecture. So it felt like it was part of the building design as well. So people didn't feel like they were actually like fenced in or enclosed in this environment, but that their views were controlled to the point where they were able to see open vistas of nature and of forests and trees and little rolling rivers along the way. And it created a beautiful environment. Within the campus itself, we included a sensory trail. And along the sensory trail, start at the very entrance into the campus, the very first piece that people would enter into would be the community center. And that community center was designed for the students and the direct care staff on campus, a place for them to go and kind of break bread together and transact and play and explore. But then also they invited people from, Bancroft invited people from the outside community to come for respite services or, you know, to give other people in the regional area, let's say the tri-state area of New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, people could come from other locations or other schools to this community center to explore, you know, the playground and the swimming pool and the vocational village, which was sitting within the community center. So along that sensory trail, what we did was, and it landed both inside and outside of the building, there were lots of opportunities for students to, or even families or direct care staff to experience in all of the various senses. So we had on the outside of the building, along the back of the building, we had a large bike trail that allowed students to explore some of their mobility issues, you know, riding a bike, swinging, you know, those are sort of common themes. And along that trail, we incorporated a lot of gardens and gardening opportunities where students could raise beds and greenhouses, where students could kind of dig in the soil, the idea of sort of coming in contact with nature and growing your own food and then being able to either cook with that or sell it in your community center became a source of pride for the students. But that food, so it has a, you know, sort of a benefit where you can, you know, you can eat the food, you can smell the food. It comes, you know, it has a taste, it has a smell. It's starting to pick up on a variety of the senses. When we designed the campus, we also used a series of psychological cues throughout all 12 buildings to help people navigate both inside and outside. Where do I enter? Which house is mine? And we used a series of textures, patterns, shapes, colors, transparency, and scale to help people navigate, okay, well, that's my house. Because each person experiences architecture differently. Some people notice the fine details, especially in the world of autism. A lot of people are very attentive to detail. So using certain textures was really important. Whereas other people notice color and they notice shape and pattern. And so the entire campus has this sort of wayfinding map throughout campus where people can experience the sensory trail, but using a series of psychological cues that sort of activate and inspire people. Oh, I'm going to go around this corner. I know I need to head in this direction next. I mentioned the pool at one point was a great strategy for sensory design and biophilic design. In this particular community center, the pool was located immediately right by the front door. and it became the identity of the community center. Schools are fun and they're loud and they're active environments. They're places where people want to come and explore, you know, what is it like with the, you know, the water, you know, dripping out of the faucet, or, you know, what is it like if I dive in, you know, those types of things. So the pool was located, you know, sort of front and center. And then we had a series of spaces that had floor-to-ceiling windows, big voluminous spaces with wood ceiling, floor-to-ceiling windows that looked out over the landscape. And those were like public lobbies and dining halls and things like that. And then there was a series of smaller, soft spaces where people could experience different environments. They could experience what it's like to have a little living room set up, that whole refuge piece that I was talking about, where you have this tiny little setup where students could rock in a rocking chair or could sit and read a book in a quiet zone. So a student is able to choose, well, today I don't want to go to the pool. I want to go and sit somewhere that's quiet. So giving them the chance to explore these various opportunities within the campus and then letting them navigate there on their own was an important piece to the project. One of the concepts that we were very interested in studying was, we call it proximity without engagement, but essentially it's the idea of a porch. And a porch is a transition zone between the outside and the inside of your home.
Right.
And transition is a big theme in the world of autism. And how do you transition people out into society? How do you transition them into the next activity that they're doing that day? And then how do you transition people? And so what we tried to do was provide lots of opportunities for transition within the building. So for instance, in the pool, we gave them a little ramp where somebody who may be insecure about diving into the pool that day or the first day, they're going to take a 1 foot step on the ramp and they're going to hang there and they're going to kind of, they're not going to engage yet. They're going to kind of observe for a few days until they feel comfortable. And then every day they're going to walk a foot further into the pool until finally, you know, week two, they're jumping in and they're happy and they're excited to join the pool.
That's so cool. So you gave them opportunities to transition at their comfort level throughout.
Exactly.
Wow.
And then we also had outside of the gym, we gave them a long bench and then also places to hang their backpacks and things like that. But some of the students were like, I don't want to go in there. I'm scared. They're playing basketball in there or whatever. So I'm just going to hang here and I'm going to watch. And it's a safe place. It's got to have a little bit of the ceiling height in this little space is a little shorter. It's surrounded by wood and I can kind of hang out here and I can watch until I feel comfortable enough to actually go in there and engage with whatever's going on in that room. So giving those opportunities for transition are, you know, really important.
That's huge. Wow. That's so awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun.
I have a question. I have two questions that I wanted to ask, because when you were talking about the cues, I guess I'm a visual person and I need to kind of like see it in my mind. So I'm trying to think like, okay, if I'm a young person with autism or whatever, I'm thinking of my daughter and she wants to go to her building or her house. Like, can you explain to me, like you're saying, the shapes and the colors and the textures and the pattern? Is it more like kind of look for the building with the wavy lines? How would you?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's that kind of stuff. That way they get familiar with, my building has, you know, S-shaped line. I don't know what they have. I'm just saying, like, you know, some kind of a lines. Mine has polka dots or something like that. So they know to look for.
Yes,
okay.
Exactly. So we tried to, even though the homes are built as duplexes and they're 4 and 5 bedroom homes, we tried to vary the roof shapes. And also some of them had porches on the front, some of them had porches on the side. So understanding, you know, where's my porch, where's my roof, which roof am I looking for? And then the siding, we varied the siding. So some of them had board and batten siding, which is vertical siding. Some of them had horizontal siding. And then some of them had, you know, details along with the siding, the patterns within the siding was like a slightly different pattern. And then some of the homes had different, you know, obviously we use different colors within a palette. We originally were proposing, you know, very bold, different colors. But at the end of the day, we decided to do more subtle color changes. So some houses are, you know, they're all tones of nature, but some houses are yellow and some houses are green and some houses are sort of beige. And so understanding, you know, that I need to navigate to my house, I'm going to use my cues of the roof shape, of where my porch is, where my door is, and what color is my house to find my house when I go home after school every day. We used it on that scale, but then we also used it on the overall campus entering into the community center. We had a big bold move that actually incorporated LED lighting of different colors so that they could experience this place at night as well, because it is a 24/7 year-round campus where people are living here at night. And they're inviting, they have activities during the winter where it gets dark at 5 o'clock. You know, people are navigating to the campus at night. So understanding not only the daytime view, but the nighttime view, what it's like to walk around campus and explore these various buildings.
So a lot of research on this project had to go. How long did this whole project take you guys? Because that's a lot of, you know, a lot of the details that you guys, I'm assuming, put into some of that, just like the thought of the transition at the various stages was, took a lot of time. How long did the whole project take?
It took about 5 years from, might have been six, from the very conceptual stages where before we even had land and a property, we were helping the client find property. And then we, you know, went through, you know, design and construction and all that. And they recently moved in. So, yeah.
Wow. And how many people worked on it? I'm just thinking, because it had to take a big design team, I'm assuming, you know, you and a lot of people to kind of brainstorm some of those things out, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, on the Bancroft side, we interviewed probably 400 people, really? Of all walks of life. I mean, they, you know, nurses and finance people. I mean, there were a lot of, it takes a village, you know, to support people with autism. And then on our side, our team, our internal team of architects, we had about 12 architects on our team, but then we had another 25 engineering consultants that joined the team along the way. And then the construction, you know, the contractors and all those various groups, there were probably hundreds of contractors that built the building. So it was a labor of love. We all really enjoyed the mission, and we became part of the Bancroft community, you know, along the way. So it was really inspiring.
It was. I mean, I can't wait to see a little bit more in detail. So we'll provide links to, I hope we can provide links to the school. Is it, is there ways to view it? Like if we put them in the show notes?
Yes. Yep. You can send pictures.
And we'll send. Okay. And then before we wrap up, like, can you share like how people, again, how some of these principles they can apply to their everyday lives or bring some of these?
Sure. I think that incorporating some of these things into your home or into your family routines, these really promote like healthy habits, whether it's, you know, the food that you eat or the exercise that you're gaining when you're walking in the neighborhood. It allows people greater concentration, greater empathy. If you have a pet, you know, understanding that that pet has feelings and that you have to feed the pet or take care of the pet. And if that is assigned, if I have to, you know, fill the water bowl every day, all of a sudden I'm, you know, understanding that, you know, I have empathy for that animal. The idea of creativity and play, exploring, you know, the curiosity, you know, allowing somebody tools to gain curiosity and creativity and play. The idea of motor skills and really encouraging people to use a variety of motor skills, whether it's walking in the neighborhood or experiencing the pool, you know, like if you have a little fountain in your yard, you know, like taking care of that or putting rocks around it, you know, understanding sort of the motor skills that can help you gain confidence as you gain motor skills. And then also a sensory understanding and appreciation of nature, of the universe, and all of the natural systems that might be going on out in the world, you know, whether it's the moon or the sunset or, you know, the seasons change and it's snowing or it's raining, really celebrating those as a family or as a household, it becomes a great chance for people to appreciate and understand nature. And so we think as architects that we can create the environments that support all of these various strategies, you know, when we're designing buildings.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you so much for sharing with us and educating us on biophilic design and all the other different things that you explained. And I'm excited to see the Bancroft Center. Is there another project you're working on that's using this that's for the special needs community as well? Or
Well, we're working on a project right now. There's a real need on the adult side.
Right.
In terms of, you know, most people age out of the system at the age of 21. And so we're really focused right now on, there are a lot of resources out there for schools and sort of the under 21 population, but the over 21 population is really where we're seeing sort of a global need. So we're currently working on a project for someone that wants to build housing across the country for adults with autism. And housing would also have a day component to it. And that day component, we're just in the beginning stages, but that day component would potentially have some way of experiencing nature, whether it's, and we're looking at potentially horse farms. You know, can you combine housing with a horse farm and you have the chance to groom the horses or to, you know, even just pet the horses or experience the horses. And we're looking at maybe other ways. Obviously, you're not going to be able to find horse farms all over the country. So what are those other ways that we can use biophilic design in, you know, whether it's a winery or, you know, what are those pieces of nature that people can explore and experience along with their living arrangements, let's just say, for on the adult side.
Yeah, no, I'm excited about that because my daughter's 22, so I'm experiencing all of that right now. And
yes, I'm sure you're experiencing
and
a real need.
And it's not so much that, you know, what somebody said to me too, which I think is important because a lot of times you'll find parents that are like, oh, my child's going to live with me forever. But I see, and I've kind of always had that in the back of my head, but, you know, now I see that eventually I'm not going to be enough. I mean, like already I'm not, I can see that she wants more than I might be able to offer her. You know, they need an environment for stuff. So I'm excited that you're doing that. I'll be interested in hearing more about that in the future. So I can't thank you enough for sharing with us. I think it's very interesting. And, you know, I'm excited to be able to share with everybody what's going on. And please send us some photos so that we can, you know, include it in the show notes and also links. And thank you very much for sharing with us.
I will. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. You've been listening to Parenting Special Needs Purposeful Conversations podcast. You can subscribe, view, and rate this podcast on iTunes. Make sure to subscribe to our free magazine for parents raising a child with special needs. We help guide you through by providing strategies, information, and inspiration. You can also reach us and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you soon.